Hello, everyone, and welcome back to An Old Guy Who Knows Shit. Sludog here. This is episode 7, Dreams Part 2. Copyright 2020 by L.R. Holtz. I'm going to assume you recently listened to Dreams Part 1, so I'm just going to dive right in here. Finally, there was the mother of all dreams that actually convinced me that I should trust them. So somewhere around that time, that year of graduating from high school, spending a summer in Hawaii, going to college, I had another one of those weird, makes-no-sense dreams. And in this one, another snapshot, I was rising from a crouch and stepping onto a gravel drive towards a little old-fashioned half-sized trailer home. And behind the trailer, brown and red cliffs rose a few hundred feet, and it was dry and dusty. I was clutching my left shoulder with my right hand, and blood was running between my fingers. I was wearing my motorcycle helmet, and as the dream shot into focus, I was just realizing that the helmet had saved my life and that I should not have it on. Zap! I was awake. Well, there was that familiar excitement that always comes with truth dreams, but this time it was exaggerated because I had escaped death for a change. My helmet had saved me. But there was no sign of a motorcycle, not even a paved road, and I have never been a motocrosser, let me tell you. But this was absolutely a truth dream, clear, sharp, aura, everything. But what the hell? Okay, so life goes on. So that summer, the summer after my freshman year in college, I got a job working for the father of a classmate. They had a ranch in the mouth of the Snake River Canyon in Idaho, and there were two Mexican cowboys who had been coming to work for him for many years, and it just so happened that they were not going to make it this year. So I cheerfully volunteered myself and my best friend to take their place. Well, her dad was very cool about it and accepted on the condition that we would work for room and board, plus I think it was something like $100 a month, and we had to promise to be his students, and he would teach us to be cowboys. Well, how cool was that? So I had a Yamaha 350, and my best friend and I piled our shit onto the homemade luggage rack, and the two of us rode that bike double from St. Charles, Missouri to Boise, Idaho. It took us 6 days, and that's another story. The point is, when we arrived, we were bunked in a half-sized trailer that was nestled in the lowland right where the Snake River Canyon first opens up. It had cliffs behind it, a gravel drive that was a treacherous son of a bitch up that canyon wall, I gotta say, and a double-wide, double-high garage across the drive from the trailer. It had a door big enough for a combine. I kept my bike in there, only riding it on our day off to explore the countryside. First, I have to tell you that when you live on a bike, as with most everything that you live with, you develop habits, routines that get you on and off, and make sure you never forget anything. And one of my routines was getting off the bike. Motor off, keys out, hold keys and teeth, take off gloves, put them on the gas tank, take off the goggles, put them on the gloves, take off the helmet, turn it upside down, hook the strap to use as a handle, drop the gloves, goggles, and keys into the helmet, hang the helmet on the handlebar. You do it so many times you never think about it, it just becomes habit. So, one Sunday, I go for a joyride. And when I get back, I pull the bike into the garage, shut off the motor, put the keys in my mouth, take off my gloves, put them on the seat, take off my goggles, put the keys and goggles on the gloves, and went to pull the rope to close the door. Did not even think about it. Now, if you've ever ridden, you know that the one thing you take off when you get off the bike is your helmet, because nothing feels stupider than walking around with a helmet on. You always take your helmet off. Well, this particular day, I did not. I walked over to the rope, pulled it, it got a little more than halfway down, and something went sprawling, crack, and I felt something hit me hard right on top of the head, and then just as hard, but very painfully, in the shoulder. I turn my head, and there is a 6-foot-long triangular shard of glass sticking up from my shoulder. There's a moment of, holy shit, and then, in slow motion, it tips more and more, and then falls to the ground with a crash that momentarily fills the air with shattered glass. Pulled off my jacket, Of course, blood is pouring out of my shoulder. I clapped my right hand over it and then ducked under the partially closed door. And as I stepped onto the gravel drive, I realized that glass had hit my head first and that I still had my helmet on. And then I thought, why the hell had I not taken my helmet off? And then I looked up, saw the trailer and the cliffs behind it, and stepped into my dream. And it brought me up short. I mean, this seriously brought me up short. I'm standing there bleeding, but I'm not moving. I'm asking myself, what just happened? Because I never, ever would have walked away from my motorcycle with my helmet on. Never before, never since. I had kept my helmet on this one time. I was still wearing my helmet as I was standing there in the desert heat thinking about it, something I would never, ever do. But that helmet had protected my head from a giant shard of glass. I had had that dream. Well, it looked for all the world like a dream I had had months before had actually changed my behavior in the reality of here and now, and that behavior change had saved my life. I took the helmet off, finally, with some difficulty, as I was also trying to stem the flow of a lot of blood, but I had to see what had happened. Well, there was a gouge right in the very top of the helmet. I ducked back in and I looked up at the door. Well, it was made in three vertical sections, each about 6 feet wide, and five horizontal sections, each about 3 feet wide, making three stacks of 5 6-by-3-foot panels. And the top horizontal section was glass. Three glass panes, each 6 feet by 3 feet, end to end across the top of the door. And what had happened was that one of the top rollers on the top corner of the door had jumped the track as it approached the bend to go down, and then that corner had dropped, bowing the door just enough to break that end pane of glass cleanly corner to corner. And one of those halves had pivoted on the 3-foot-long edge until it was pointed straight down, and then it had dropped right onto the top of my head. It had bounced. Well, it had to have bounced because there was no scratch, just a gouge in the top of my helmet. And then it had stuck in my shoulder. A wedge of glass, 6 feet long, 3 feet wide at the top, tapering to a point somewhere in my left arm. I had seen it quite clearly, sticking up before it wavered and fell. This giant glass spike had fallen from a height of 15 feet right onto the top of my head. I mean, right onto the top of my head. And I stood there in the broken glass in an ever-growing puddle of my own blood, and I looked up at that door, and I looked at the glass until I knew I understood exactly what had happened. Having prescient dreams is one thing, but to have a dream reach from several months in the past right into this moment, now, and actually change my behavior in such a way that it saved my life? Well, I mean, as you can imagine, it was quite a leap. I had to know exactly what had happened. Only then could I resume my trip back to the trailer and a telephone. Well, it turned out that I was more than a little bit lucky that day, because the angle of the rebound meant that it had hit the top of the outside of my shoulder and went straight down. It left a gash about 3 inches wide and had penetrated almost to my elbow, but it had slipped between the muscle and the skin, and no real damage was done. The doctor who sewed me up confirmed that if it had hit me anywhere else, it would have done serious damage. Half an inch farther in, and it would have sliced tendons and muscles requiring surgery. Another half inch, and it could have even taken off my arm. And what if it had hit the top of my head, I asked. Well, you'd probably be dead, he said. You were very lucky. So I did a lot of thinking over those next few days as my arm healed. The significance of the truth dream suddenly seemed to be enormous. For the first time, I really thought about the idea of a truth dream and that having them might actually mean something significant. In and of itself, it required a pretty serious ontological adjustment. My universe had to account for some part of me being able to see into the future or into the distant past. Well, that meant that the linearity of time was, in fact, completely in question. Because if I could see what had not happened yet, then some part of me was already experiencing the future. And the only conclusion I could draw from that was that the future doesn't always happen in the future. Or it's already happening. Or at some level, and I think I like this theory the best, it's all happening at once. Something like that. But if the truth dreams were always right about the future and, in fact, had saved my life, then didn't I have to believe that the other lives and the numerous deaths that all of those other truth dreams were just as true of my past? So, if my dream self can go in either direction, future or past, then my subconscious inhabits a time that is not linear, but is in fact just as real a life as the one my consciousness is aware of right now. And what exactly is that subconscious that is inhabiting a different universe from our consciousness? And the more I thought about it, the more it seemed like, well, that is the thing that has to be the being, the entity, the spirit, whatever that is me, that makes up a person. What else could it be? A scientist will say, well, electrons flowing between neurons in your brain, that's all it is. But that scientific universe does not have a place for seeing into the future, for dreams that save lives, for events that do not follow a consistent timeline. And as I allowed the possibility that this might be that an essential part of myself, a part of my not conscious self, inhabits a timeless world and is, in fact, the essence of myself, then that spirit, if you want to call it, that is my real self and has sojourned through a series of physical lives over the course of many generations. Once I allowed the possibility that this might be real, that there's a spiritual being that remains constant, that flows in and out of a series of lives. Wow, I found myself just awash in what seemed like memories of the lives I had dreamed. I mean, it was almost like they weren't even memories of the dreams, but memories of the lives for a really brief period there. It was just, I was awash in all of these things. I did know what it felt like to die. I did know what it felt like to live in medieval times and in ancient times and to live in a cave and to not have language and to have breasts, to be the fuckee as well as the fucker. And as I let all this wash over me, I began to see myself in a much bigger context, a context that included all of the lives, not just this one. And underlying them, I could feel another quest, not entirely unlike my current quest to figure it all out, but much larger, a quest for good or for betterment or something like that, a quest to improve that themed all of the lives. Some moved it ahead, like the shaman. Some set it back, the torturer. And there was a very strong feeling that the good deeds of the shaman and the sins of the torturer are still with me, that I'm still trying to tap the one and make up for the other, that they were all interrelated, and that this life now is me in the trenches trying to carve out some little piece of goodness out of this physical life. Part of a vast pool of similar sojourners struggling against forces of destruction, both spiritual and physical, all striving to improve and to find goodness. And it jived. My experience of my life through my dreams and my feelings about that experience in terms of a larger cosmological picture jived. For the first time it jived, it made sense. And this didn't all come together in those days immediately after the glass fell. Some of it took months to process, and some of it probably took years, and some decades. You know, it had to be collated with other experiences, other evidence, but that dream was the catalyst. That snapshot of a dream, me clutching a bleeding shoulder on a desert drive in a motorcycle helmet, that dream was the catalyst for a catharsis that opened up a whole new spiritual world. And I began to formulate a picture of a universe that works. For me, anyway. There is an interesting side note to this story. After the glass shard dream, the truth dream stopped. And I've had a few here and there over the years and revisited a couple of them when healers were working on my body. But I've experienced nothing like the truth dreams of my late teen years. I've often wondered if there wasn't some cosmic plan or something associated with them, like I had to have enough of them to convince me to believe the one that would save my life. And when that was over, they weren't needed anymore. Well, whatever the reason, they stopped. I'll always be grateful that I experienced them at all. Some of the memories of those lives I lived in the truth dreams have faded with the inexorable march of time. But, you know, others are still surprisingly clear and sharp, even now, almost like 40 years later. Memories that live right alongside memories of this life. I'm still trying to figure out what it is I'm supposed to be doing with all those years that dream bought me. But this is kind of fitting in with my whole quest formulation, I gotta say. Maybe this is it. But wait a minute, don't go anywhere. There's still more. All right, I know we're pushing our time limit here, but I have to tell you this, because there's one more, even more interesting side note, because the preceding note I wrote, I added to the story sometime between roughly 2010 and 2012. Well, surprise, surprise, no sooner had I written that the truth dreams had disappeared from my life than, yep, you guessed it, another one. But this one was even more extraordinary because this one reached from my dream life into my present physical life and actually left a mark. So this dream was another ancient war dream. Yes, I know, I must have been a warrior many times. In this dream, I was in a city, an ancient city, wood and mud buildings. I had no shield, but I had a vague sense of having lost it in the battle and feeling somewhat vulnerable without it. I and a compatriot were moving through the city fairly quickly, hacking our way through whatever resistance we encountered. And I knew there were more men just behind us because we were on point, as they would say today. But the opposing army seemed to have retreated or something. So we come to this kind of square, and as we're crossing it, suddenly there are some arrows coming at us from the left and the yells of some kind of counterattack. One of the arrows passes through the top of my right ankle just as I'm about to lunge to meet the counterattackers. And I stumble and I fall all clumsy and I see an opponent's sword coming down at me. And for a second I think it's over, but then my compatriot's swing meets my opponent's swing, diverting it. And we all stumble and roll, kicking and yelling and stabbing and hacking. And our other compatriots arrive and I pull the arrow out and we successfully resist the counterattack, driving the other army out of the city. And the dream then moved into a post-battle scene where I was at a pretty comfortable house or tent or something, lots of rugs and curtains with a woman I was particularly fond of, and we had just made love, and she was insisting on dressing my wounds, the worst of which was the hole through the top of my ankle, which I kept poo-pooing as nothing, but which she cleaned and covered with something that looked like mud and moss telling me that it would heal quickly. And I apparently used it as an excuse to take sick leave and huddle with my honey for a couple of days before returning to my men. Yeah, an epic dream. But when I woke from this dream, imagine my surprise when I discovered, and here I have to ask you to go to anoldguywhoknowsshit.com and click on the dream lesion link. As you can see, there's a pair of wounds just under that tendon on the front of my ankle where clearly an arrow might have passed through. And you, of course, have to just take my word for this seemingly miraculous event. I have no proof other than those photographs. I don't have a time-stamped picture of my ankle the day before with time-stamped versions of the above to prove that this mostly healed pair of lesions did, in fact, appear out of nowhere on the morning after I had this dream. So I can't prove to you that this actually happened. My wife will attest to it. She saw it. She has trouble granting it credence herself, for there really is no place in her world for such a thing to happen. But she has to admit that, yes, it did happen. I had no wounds or lesions on my ankle, and then the next morning, I woke with two nearly healed wounds that do look for all the world like an arrow shaft passed through my ankle, an arrow with a round point, right exactly where the arrow passed through my ankle in my dream. There it is. It wasn't there long. In fact, it only took a couple of days for it to disappear entirely, and I never felt any pain or discomfort, just these lesions that appeared and then disappeared almost as quickly. So, Horatio, you were saying about there being more things in heaven and on earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy? Well, let me ask you this. Let's say you had these dream experiences, in particular, one which pretty clearly saved your life, and another, years later, that left the marks of an actual wound. What would you think about dreams that had that particular aura of truth? This is an old guy who knows shit. Signing off till next time. Oh,